New England in the late 19th century was home to a set of high-spirited and ambitious writers who were, for the first time, creating a distinctly American literature. From this close-knit literary society emerged Herman Melville and Nathaniel Hawthorne, who were known to be friends. In The Whale, A Love Story, novelist Mark Beauregard explores the boundaries of this friendship. Through a nuanced reading of Melville's real letters and other original sources, Beauregard offers the fictionalized story of two men who shared a deep, emotionally charged bond that may have transformed the writing and meaning of Moby Dick. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Mark Beauregard to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
You're going to be throughout our area, and I will give a list of your events in a few moments. But let us first talk about how you came to this particular idea.
Well, it was kind of an accident. I was researching an entirely different book about Oliver Wendell Holmes, who was Melville's neighbor during the time that Melville was writing Moby Dick. And through researching Holmes's letters and journal entries, I came across Melville's letters to Hawthorne and became fascinated by how frank and provocative they were. So I went looking for a literary biography or some scholarship which would explore their relationship, the relationship between Melville and Hawthorne. And while I found a lot about their literary influence, I didn't really find anything about their personal connection that explained the passion of the letters. And so that led me on an odyssey of scholarship and reading, diving into their archives and letters to really understand what their relationship was like.
Why did you decide to go the novel route as opposed to a nonfiction account of these two?
A couple of reasons. The main one is that I really wanted to give an idea of their flesh and blood lives. To me, these two characters, these two figures, are so iconic and they're so distant from us because they're so much a part of our culture that we don't have a relationship to them as people anymore, I thought. And so I wanted to bring them alive as people. And secondly, I really wanted to give an idea of the nature of the impossible, the nature of longing. And an academic paper, I thought, couldn't really begin productively with the question, what is it like when you love something so much that your life seems to depend on it and you can't have it? And that seemed like more of a novel to me.
Did it constrict you in any way, or did it do the opposite and give you tremendous freedom?
It's a great question. I felt so constricted. I wanted to be really true to these two men. I love Hawthorne and Melville. I love their writing, and I really wanted to honor them and pay homage to them. So I also wanted to get the facts right. And we know so much about them. There's so much scholarship about them that their lives are really well known. And so I had to be very careful to follow accurately the history of their lives and their interactions. So for me, the trick was finding a way to express them that was lively and immediate and shared some of the joy of their own writing while staying within the boundaries of what they actually did and said.
So at what point did historians and scholars start to put the pieces together and look at these letters as love letters as opposed to letters between friends?
The first readings started in the 1950s. Well, there was a Moby Dick revival in the 1920s around the centenary of Melville's birth. But mostly people were just looking at the symbolism of the whale and talking about the actual work that Melville had done. In the 1950s, scholars started to look at the letters and look at the journals that he had written and wonder a little bit more about what the nature of the relationship was like. And at first, they emphasized Hawthorne's literary influence on Melville. Melville started using allegory in a much more rich way under Hawthorne's influence. Moby Dick is unlike his previous work in that way. And then later in the 50s and in the beginning of the 60s, people started to tease out threads of how Hawthorne's journals linked into Melville's letters and that the possibility that there might be something more to their relationship than just a literary friendship.
So on the first page of Moby Dick, the book is dedicated to Nathaniel Hawthorne. So with that in mind and with this scholarship and these letters in mind, how did you then read Moby Dick? Because it's in a completely different way then.
Right. And The dedication is the first tip that something unusual is happening, but there are many clues throughout Moby Dick that lead you back to Hawthorne. There are a tremendous number of homoerotic scenes, which there also are in Melville's other work. But there's a wedding between two men, Ishmael and Queequeg, and the way Melville describes it is so unusual for someone who was sort of a normative heterosexual male of the time. It's a relationship that's literally unthinkable. So for Melville to be describing marriage between two men in his book, and then for him also to be writing these incredibly passionate letters to Hawthorne, was really striking. And then again, his use of allegory. Hawthorne has a way of finding the eternal in the everyday. He's always looking at objects and seeing God in them. He's always speculating about the relationship between his everyday life and the eternal values that he strives for. And under his influence, Melville starts to do the same thing. And you can trace throughout Moby Dick ways that Melville, in his revision under Hawthorne's influence, starts to use allegory in exactly the same way that Hawthorne does.
How much was the relationship actually realized?
That's a good question, and I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in some of their meetings. We don't know the answer to that, but we have some clues from Sophia Hawthorne's journals. When Nathaniel died in 1864, his wife Sophia prepared some of his journals for publication, and when she did so, she blacked out some passages, and scholars from Harvard in the 1950s decided they would go back and look at the originals to find out what was missing and what was included in the published journals. So they x-rayed Sophia's markings and her redactions, and they discovered that almost all of her redactions had to do with times when Melville had come over to the house and Hawthorne and Melville had stayed up late into the night drinking brandy and smoking cigars and talking. And while this isn't any evidence per se, it's interesting that of the very few passages that Sophia blacked out, almost all of them had to do with Melville's visits. And also, Melville burned all of Hawthorne's letters at Hawthorne's request. So this is actually the first thing that sort of led me to believe that something mysterious was going on, was this kind of secrecy around Melville in the Hawthorne house.
As should be noted, both men were married, so they were operating in the constructs of marriages, and especially in Hawthorne's case, a by all appearances, a healthy marriage.
Absolutely, and also we should remember that Hawthorne had just published Scarlet Letter at this time, so he was very keenly aware of the issues of adultery, and he was a profoundly moral man. He did not want to be, first of all, seen as committing adultery, nor did he want to commit adultery. He really honored and loved his wife. So the question to me is, then, as you mentioned, they were both married and they both had children. So the question to me is not, was Hawthorne gay or was Melville gay, but where along the continuum of fluid identity did they fall? And I think that while many previous scholars have emphasized Hawthorne's rejection of Melville, what I was interested in is the kinds of feelings that Hawthorne might have felt that might have come up because of Melville's extreme ardor and his extreme passion. And I think it's possible that while they didn't necessarily realize a sexual or erotic relationship, they did have feelings that we would recognize today as being along that continuum.
And when you look at the two men, certainly in your reading of this and in reading of the novel, that it was much more torturous for Melville than Hawthorne.
Yeah, I think the driving engine of their passion was Melville's, and he desperately wanted to be with Hawthorne. I think that's clear from his letters and from his other writings, but I don't think Hawthorne was unaffected. In the Blithedale Romance, the novel that Hawthorne wrote just after leaving Lenox, just after Moby Dick was published, there's a relationship between a character named Hollingsworth, who is very like Melville in his appearance, and Coverdale, who's the narrator, who's also very like Hawthorne in his appearance. And Hollingsworth, at one point in the novel, says to Coverdale, "Would you please run away with me and be with me forever?" And Coverdale rejects him, but he reports that the heart pang was not merely figurative, but an absolute torture of the breast. Now, that's fictional. That's in Blaisdell romance. But the correspondences between their two relationships and their parting are really striking. And I think Hawthorne was deeply moved by Melville's passion.
As you mentioned a moment ago, there is no record of it. But did you want these characters in your novel to have a sexual relationship?
Well, what I mainly wanted to do was to honor them and to not drift very far from the historical record. So they have an erotic relationship in my novel, but I don't portray anything that can't be reasonably inferred from the record. So my intent is not to be salacious or to invent anything. It's simply to explore what we know actually existed. So that erotic charge is there, but it's also mingled with a spiritual charge and a literary connection.
You are speaking, we should note, at the House of Seven Gables at the Hawthorne home in Salem, Massachusetts. You are going to be doing an author-led tour of the Melville home on the 23rd at 4 p.m. in our region. You will be at the bookstore in Lenox at 7 o'clock, also on the 23rd. And you will also be in South Hadley on the 24th and at Odyssey Book Shop. All these places are friends. And on the 25th in Troy at Market Block Books. So how has the community of Melville and Hawthorne scholars embraced the book and what you're doing here?
I'm actually really overwhelmed by the positive response of Melville scholars. I had a lot of correspondence with the Melville community over the years, and I've sent around the book to a lot of the people who helped me with research, and they've been overwhelmingly positive. And I was especially touched. Last night I gave a reading at Harvard Bookstore, and Melville's great-great-grandson, Peter Whittemore, came and had some really moving words to say and really complimentary things to say about my book. So I've just been really touched and overwhelmed by the response.
Well, again, you will be at the following places. On June 23rd, you'll be in Pittsfield leading a tour of the Melville home in Pittsfield for the Berkshire Historical Society. That is at 4 o'clock. You can also meet Mark and find out more about the book by going to the bookstore in Lenox that same evening, June 23rd at 7 o'clock. You will also be at the Odyssey Bookstore in South Hadley, Massachusetts at 7 p.m. and on Saturday in Troy at Market Block Books at 11 a.m. The name of the novel is The Whale, A Love Story. It is published by Viking. Mark Beauregard, thank you very much for speaking with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the novel is The Whale, A Love Story by Mark Beauregard. It is published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.